Parental advisory warning. Carlosophies, provoking thought and liberating people from their own bullshit since 2015. First time here? Hit subscribe. You'll want to stick around.
Hi there. So I am actually just sitting in my lounge room with my Rode Smart Lav, relaxing, because today has been thrown, I've been thrown a bit of a curveball, actually. I was supposed to right now be sitting in a board meeting for a new media startup that I'm helping form, and my internet just, well, two factors. One, there's a scheduled blackout here all day, so I don't have a modem because I don't have any power. So I've been running my client sessions and all my meetings off my, tethering off my phone. But all of a sudden now my internet, my phone is showing no service. So obviously the mobile tower is down at the moment. So I'm kind of sitting here in that weird place where I would have used to have been really stressed out about this. Like, what are they going to think? I can't get back on. I can't explain myself. And now I just get like, shit happens, you know, shit happens in life and you've just got to roll with the punches. Anyway, I've just been sitting here and I've spoken a few times about how I am this year going to be doing some voice training. And part of that, diving into that, is sharing a, or writing a voice bio. So a bit about your, you know, your biography of your voice. And so I've just been sitting here making some notes and I thought, well, you know, the best way I really process is to speak and then listen back and, you know, and flesh it out from there. So I thought, well, I've got nothing else to do. I've got no internet. I've got no power. I can read a book, sure, and I've got Sapiens there to read, so I totally could do that. But I don't know. I thought, well, maybe I'd just sit here and share my story of my voice and see where this leads. So I think it's a really interesting exercise anyway, so I thought I'd share it with you while I'm doing it. So my voice story, I guess it starts, I actually tried to ring my mum because I wanted to ask her what I was like. Was I a chatty kid like my daughter? She's like chatty, chatty, chatty. Or was I relatively quiet? I remember being quite shy as a young child, but also quite loud in environments where I felt a sense of belonging, I guess, or safety. So I was always a performer. I was always a kid who loved to put on a show for her parents and her parents' friends. You know, whenever we would go to friends' houses, I would, I would be organizing everyone to do a concert of something, whether it was like Men at Work Down Under or a dance to that or whatever. But it was always when in places where I felt safe. Like if you throw, and I'm still the same now, if you throw me into a place where I know no one, I'm very introverted. I'm actually very shy in terms, like it seems such a contrast because when you know me, one of the things people always say about me is that I'm really bold and courageous and confident, when actually, like, there are circumstances for sure. Like if I'm introduced into a group and you know that, then I'll be more loud than if I don't have a, you know, an invite, really, as a projector. It's about an invite. And it's interesting because I've been reflecting on that too and how that's played out in my life, the being a projector thing. I was just thinking the other day about when I first started school, and I have this memory of me being afraid and my mum saying to me, well, just pick someone else who looks afraid or more afraid of you and be kind to them. And then that, you know, and I think that's really been something that I've embraced throughout my life, is like you know, when, yeah, when I'm nervous, it's like focus on service, I guess. Focus on finding a person who needs a friend, I guess. But anyway, so I've just been thinking about myself and my voice and how it's come to develop over the years. And if it told its own story, what would it be? And I guess it would be partly that it's a, you know, it's shy unless it feels comfortable, and then it's not shy at all. And I think that is a classic projector thing, right? Like when our voice and our opinion is invited, it can be a really powerful thing. And when not so much. So as a kid in primary school, I would say that I was a bit of a dork in terms of, you know, I was just a really passionate kid, and I was very passionate about justice. I was very passionate about certain movements, I guess. Like I've always been someone who's been very passionate, and more so probably when I was a child. And then there was a big period there for maybe 20 years where not so much, and I'll talk a bit about that, why. And then in the last, you know, 10, re-finding my voice and reconnecting to the things that I'm really passionate and I think I should be vocal about, you know. And that has been a real practice. So in primary school, I was the kind of kid who would, I don't know, like, you know, was a dork, but I also loved convincing teachers to let me out of class to go and teach, you know, the kindy or prep kids dance or create a play. And I was always convincing my teachers that it would be a good idea for them on Friday or whenever, you know, to go into the multi-purpose room and I'll organize a play. Or in grade 6, I started a school newspaper. You know, I always had that. There was a leader quality to me, but it wasn't a leader in a popularity sense. Like I wasn't cool. I wasn't particularly, I probably was maybe a little bit uncool in primary school. I don't even know that cool, not cool was a thing. I don't think I had awareness around that at that time. But you know, I would sit down and create songwriting circles with my friends, and I was definitely a leader. I would make up games and everyone like, and I guess like one word that used to be used to describe me was bossy. I had a bossy kind of energy and, that's cool. I actually like that. I think it definitely triggered some of the adults in my life, not necessarily my mum, but you know, other, not even necessarily my parents, but other adults in my life, I think were rather triggered by my bossiness. And I think where things really took a turn for me was when I hit high school, and maybe I'm not alone in this, but what I realized, I went to a pretty rough high school, by anyone's standards. It was the kind of place where you really had to be careful. It was rough. It was an interesting demographic, but there were drugs and, you know, maybe that's just a normal high school, I don't know, but it had a really bad reputation, the school I went to, and for good reason. The year I started was, I think, the year that we got a new principal, and he was trying to bring everything into line more, but it had a real bad reputation. When I think about my school, I think about a little bit about the movie from the 60s, To Sir With Love. That was kind of the vibe of my school. If you've seen that movie, you'll know. And interesting, To Sir With Love was a song that I absolutely loved growing up because I loved that movie. And I used to sing it. It was the song that I used to sing all the time whenever I got the opportunity to do karaoke, or, you know, I sang it at my mum's birthday because she and my dad loved To Sir With Love. So, interesting that it ties into music because, you know, that was another thing that I was really, that was primarily how I used my voice. I sang all the time. I love singing. And so, a bit of a side tangent, really. So it's just interesting that music has made its way into this because I hadn't really considered that. But yeah, to Sir With Love, singing, it's all, yeah, it's all, it's interesting because the singing will come back into my story. So hit high school and I was like, I'm gonna have to watch myself here. And I think this is where it's almost, there was a fracturing of me. There was the dorky me, and I was still not necessarily. So in high school, I became this, I knew that it would serve me best, and probably not consciously, but definitely subconsciously or unconsciously, I did my best to be relatively invisible. Invisible enough to go under the radar because it was, could be life-threatening, actually. Like, there was a lot of bullying that used to happen at my school. It was in my interest to keep a low profile, let's just put it that way. And so that's what I did. I kind of realized that that passionate person that I had been in school, the person who was, like staunchly passionate and vocal about justice and things like one, I was the kind of kid who would sell her toys on the nature strip to raise money for charities. So, you know, there was always a philanthropic part to my life, really. And then when I got to school, I realized that that wasn't really going to fly, that person who was so vocal and passionate was a liability when it came to high school. And so I reined myself in a bit. And yeah. And it worked. You know, I kind of coasted through school, unbullied, not cool, but not super uncool, just kind of coasted. And I feel like that's actually in terms of like my all the things. It's kind of where I found myself. I coasted. I wasn't necessarily great at anything and I wasn't necessarily terrible at anything. You know, I just kind of was I kind of was mediocre, I guess is I don't really like that word, but not that I've got any shtick about it, but like I don't think there's anything wrong with mediocre, but for me, it was more mediocre as a protection because even, and I don't know, I wouldn't consider myself super smart, but even that being super smart was something that was potentially made you vulnerable too, you know? So toned down who I was, really. And I still, like, I still sang. I still did a bit of singing, not publicly. And I guess I remember going for a school play, for a part in a school play. It was Grease. I really wanted to play Rizzo because I thought that was a, you know, her vocal range was kind of similar to mine. She's got quite a nasally sound. I have quite a, you know, nasally kind of singing voice. I just felt like I would do that well, but I struggled with the performance aspect of it. And I think this is something that I've struggled with a lot and over the years and delved into, and this is what I really would love to focus this year on is further getting comfortable with not necessarily performance as in like faking something in terms of that style of performance or doing something for a specific objective. I don't know, I need to dig into what I think performance is about, but there's this part of me where it hasn't felt real. You know, like it's felt like pretending. It feels like to me that's what acting is a bit. It's pretending. And I've realized more recently that that's not necessarily true, because when someone's acting, what they're actually doing is accessing, you know, like they're accessing parts of them. They're accessing their own experience and then bringing that forward to tell a story. And I think that's something that could serve me well. And so I want to get to this place this year where I feel more comfortable in, you know, I have considered maybe going and doing some improv, which feels so frightening to me. Being on the spot just feels super vulnerable. And, you know, like not knowing where I want to go with something. It seems so weird because I'm here and I just kind of free flow and I don't really know what I'm going to say, or I'm not really curating my conversation as I go. I'm just speaking. But it's interesting when there's an audience, it changes things. So if this was live and I knew there were people listening here, it changes it. And thinking about that reminds me when I worked in radio. When I'd hit that record button, I had to be on, you know, and I had to make sure that I didn't make any glaring errors and make a fool of myself. And And so there is this piece of protection that happens when, you know, like when we're exposing ourselves. And I feel like sharing your voice with the world kind of is a way of exposing. You are vulnerable when you share your voice with the world. I just want to be able to be more present and okay with, you know, I feel like there's these magical moments that I've had in my life where I've been really super present and felt deeply connected, and they've often come through feeling very fucking uncomfortable. If you've been here for a while, you might remember a few years ago I did public speaker training, and there was this moment where I was really put on the spot. I had to basically stand there and act different characters while answering questions or something. I can't even remember, but it was like really brutal, in your face, million questions, my mind's going, whoa, all over the place. And then I came to this place where that all melted away and I was just really present, and I was just like, I don't know, you know, like I got beyond the I don't know bit and I came into this place of like just presence. And it's happened a few times in my life. I spoke about once here, or a few times over the years, when I went back to singing lessons, and I'm just getting a few messages. I went back to singing lessons and I had been asked to play piano. I've spoken about this here before. I didn't know that, like, basically my singing teacher told me to tell this story about, you know, going to the beach one day and through piano. And I was like, I don't know how to play a piano. How am I going to tell this story? And then she was like, just start, see where it goes. And so I just allowed myself to be in that moment and go with it, you know, like actually go there. And this is the key, like really fucking go there, commit to the moment and go there. Oh my God, I'm having like dominoes falling all over the place in my head right now. So it was like, you know, I just really want to be able to fucking go for it without worrying about what people are going to think about me, without worrying about ramifications, without worrying about offending people, without worrying, like just really fucking go for it. And these moments have been where I've gotten out of my own way and allowed myself just to be here now And, you know, and that's really an uncomfortable place to be, because my childhood, and particularly those adolescent years at school, I shut down that part of me, that was really passionate and just outspoken and didn't give a fuck, you know, didn't care about her social status, didn't give a shit about what other people thought about her, just did it because it felt fucking good and fucking right. And then high school really changed that for me. And I became someone who realized she had to protect herself from that version of me, from that outspoken, wild, you know, like when I was comfortable. And I felt comfortable at school to a certain extent. So once I was established in a class, I kind of could, you know, and yeah, I could just be me. And then, yeah, and then like the teenage years and the 20s really changed that for me. And I feel like that's what led to my depression, actually, was me not being connected to that part of me. I'd shut that part of me down, that part of me that is me, down so much that I was numb. You know, the passion was not there. And I feel like the last, you know, going back to singing lessons was one of the most powerful things I've done. And I've spoken about that a lot over the years in ripping off the Band-Aid and helping me really develop more of a relationship with my voice. And this podcast has been really just a practice of me showing up weekly and practicing speaking. And it's helped me figure out who I am again and what I want to say and how I want to say it. And, you know, and then this last 12 months, oh, I've teetered between, you know, I've really struggled with not wanting to offend people and not wanting to say the wrong thing and not wanting to be on the wrong side of the argument. You know, all those things from high school have come up again and I've been working through them. And I feel like I'm in a place now where I'm getting to the point where, yeah, I'm, you know, it feels really uncomfortable and it feels exposed to have my say. But it also feels really important. It feels really important right now for me to further explore my voice, for me to develop an even deeper relationship with it, to come to trust it more, and to close the gap between the me that I want people to perceive me to be and the me that I actually am. You know, like close the gap, like get almost, not that I want to be without nerves, because I feel like nerves, particularly when it comes to speaking, you know, that energy does serve you. It helps me to be present, you know, now that I can be present to those uncomfortable feelings. It means that when I'm feeling nervous, I can feel it being of service to me. It's giving me energy to be able to deliver with energy, which is actually a gift. But what I'd like to be able to do is remove the red button syndrome. So I have this thing that I call red button syndrome, right? It's when I hit record. So when I was in radio and I used to hit that red button, you know, nerves would come because suddenly I was live and I was exposed. And the live element is something that I'm still not comfortable with. I don't enjoy doing Facebook and Instagram lives. I do enjoy public speaking, even though that is also live. I really want to work on that red button syndrome where, you know, I see it happen right now. You know, we've got Clubhouse, which I've been spending a bit of time on. For those who are not familiar with Clubhouse, it's like an audio app and it's kind of like a mixture of conference vibes with like talkback radio. So people can create a room and they can just have conversations with other people. And, you know, and there's really not that great elements to it. It's a real land grab at the moment. everybody is out there promote, you know, heavily trying to subtly promote themselves. I hate that shit. Like, that all feels really, that actually feels like performance to me in not a great way. You know, there's performance in that when you connect to something real and you can feel that in acting or in performance, when someone's really deeply connected to the feeling and the performance and they're in it, versus, right, so what's the strategy here? How am I going to show up here? What am I going to get out of it? What am I going to bring? What's the ROI? You know, what do I want out of this thing? Like, that's all good things to consider. I'm not saying, like, don't consider what you want out of things. Like, you know, definitely do. But, you know, there's a lot of subtle self-promotion and you know, like, you know, I'm just being of service here. And it's like, yeah, okay, but also let's not all put that under the umbrella of being of service and recognize that actually it's self-serving too, right? And own that. Like, be fucking self-serving without the cloak of, I'm just here being of service. Like, that's a bit of a judgment, but you know what I mean? It's like people, when I see it happen in club rooms all the time, and I feel it happen within me. When I'm just jumping on a call with a friend, it's different to when somebody asks me a question on Clubhouse. Like, it's different. If I'm in a room and I'm there to share something, that something happens, you know, and I don't think, sometimes I can feel it happen in this podcast, but most of the time I'm really just riffing. And because I also know that if I don't like this, I'm just not going to post it. You know, there are times where I haven't liked what I've said and I've still posted it just to feel what it feels like to push through that. And what happens when I do say something that maybe I feel uncomfortable about and sharing it, because I don't want to just share the safe stuff, right? And I feel like that's the gap I want to close, the gap between me with a trusted friend, me in a trusted environment, being the person that I am, having the conversations that are real and raw and authentic and in the now, versus the performer who isn't necessarily connected to something real because I have expectations attached to it. And some of the expectations are actually about how good this is going to be, how it's going to be perceived by the other. And I guess what I want to focus more on is like being in that feeling where I'm just really connected to the muse, whatever that fucking is, you know? So yeah, that turned out to be a really long one. And there's so much more I want to say about my voice and the practice that I've had and how it's been just a continued evolution. I feel like there is this element where I have always liked the sound of my own voice. I think maybe when I first heard it, when I had the double tape deck back in the 80s, I was like, oh, that's interesting. It doesn't sound like me, but you know, but then over the years I've come to like that voice because I've also crafted it and honed it over the years. And radio, I didn't even touch on that, but what radio did for my voice. And then the constant, you know, like I remember sitting with my manager. Oh, there's actually two quick things I want to cover here about wounding when it comes to the voice, right? And I have wounding when it comes to my voice, for sure. When I worked in radio, I had a general manager who was just like a fucking asshole. And I remember we used to have these regular, you know, we used to have these regular meetings where I had to take in a recording. I used to dread them. I used to have to record a part of my show and I'd try to pick the best bit and take it in, and he'd listen to it and he'd go, And I'd be like, well, what can I improve? And he was like, nothing, that was shit. I was like, well, what can I do to improve? Be less shit. Like, he actually said that to me. How could I improve? Be less shit. Well, thank you. I actually said to the guy, well, thank you. You know, and I remember having a meeting with him because in the end, I kind of managed to, I don't know, like I think I maybe just chameleoned or something into a person that he thought he could have a conversation with. And he once said to me, you know, that he couldn't because he'd had numerous lawsuits against him for being a chauvinist prick, and saying really inappropriate things. He felt like he couldn't say things, he couldn't give feedback because, you know, like that he would just get another lawsuit. And I was like, well, you know, when you become a general manager, it doesn't mean that you become a general. You also have to manage, you know, and if you're not an asshole, then you're not going to have a lawsuit. Anyway, so these constant meetings that I would have where there was no real feedback other than be less shit. And as a voiceover artist, I've made money. My entire career is based on my voice. And that has come with lots of harsh criticism. You know, when I first started out and people would be like, not know that I was the Carly that was represented. I don't know how they didn't put two and two together, but you know, they'd be like, oh, I like this voice and this voice. Carly's too, blah, 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 you know, or like, when I recorded a TV show once and I was doing a voiceover for a TV show and they were really great at helping me craft my voice, but having people pick out what's wrong with it is actually really a tough thing to then, you know, to then stay authentic to your voice because you've had it pulled apart and put back together and, you know, so there was that aspect. And then I also remember when I was 18, actually when I was maybe 10 or 11, I was walking, maybe 12, I was walking with a friend of mine and we were singing and I was singing Do Re Mi from Sound of Music. And I thought, oh, I'm really digging the sound of my singing voice. Maybe I could be a singer or something. I'm really enjoying the sound of my own voice here. And I said to the friend of mine, what do you think? Do you think I've got a good voice? And she was like, meh. And it crushed me. It crushed me because she wasn't hearing what I was hearing. And then it made me feel like I wasn't here. It made me not trust my voice. What I was hearing wasn't what she was hearing. She didn't like it, so there must have been something wrong with it, you know? And then when I was 18, I was in this very dysfunctional relationship, my first love, I guess. And I had said to him very vulnerably that, you know, I loved singing, and he said, well, sing me something. And I sang him the Bangles' Eternal Flame, and it was so real and heartfelt and raw. And then when I finished, he was like, meh, average. And again, it just broke my trust with my voice, you know? I was in a band when I was 18. Wow, this is getting long, isn't it? Thank you if you're still listening. I was in a band when I was like 17, 18, called Non-Sobriety. Embarrassing chapter of my life, actually. We only did a couple of gigs and most of the time I had to get completely shit-faced in order to have the courage to stand up and sing. And to the point where there was one birthday party that we were performing at and I had pretty much spewed and passed out by the time we got to stage. And so it was a clusterfuck. Anyway, you know, all of those things have led me to distrust my voice in some way. So I want to share all this, number one, to explore it myself and to explore my own relationship with my voice, and to so that I can better help people, you know, can reconnect to their voice. Because I don't think, you know, there's all this stuff around finding your voice. I don't think you ever lose your voice unless you physically lose it. You know, sometimes we just, and it's the same with creativity. Sometimes it's not that we've lost our voice, it's that we have shut it down. And it's not about finding our voice, it's about reintegrating it and healing. You know, some healing sometimes needs to be done. There's a lot of wounding around creativity, around art, around performance, around music, you know, around using your voice. And I feel like this is an area where I want to work more, is in helping people heal from, you know, past trauma that has informed how they show up now. Because I know the power of, from someone who is a creator, the power of being able to be present and in the moment. You know, that's really my end goal here, is being able to create from that place of purity, pure energy. You know, that's where I want to create from, not from judgment and not from the critic and not from the protector, but from this, not really necessarily empower, but this place of presence. Because when I see it, you know, I feel it. When we hear a song, like for me, when I hear certain songs, I'm covered from head to toe in goosebumps because I can feel their connection to creativity. I can feel their connection to their emotions, where they were when they were writing that song, you know. And it's the same with when I see a really great performance of any kind. I'm moved. You know, whether that is something beautiful that somebody's written, whether it's, you know, even a piece of fucking film or TV, a piece of art, whatever it is, even like, you know, a beautifully tended garden, a good meal, all of this shit, when we're in that space of presence, that is my end goal. And I want to help people get to that place too. But I guess first I've got to get there myself. Or at least be, and I feel like I'm part of the way there. And maybe I don't ever get fully there. Maybe not. I don't know. But, I do want to practice it. So thank you for listening. This has been a really long one. I hope there's been some little reflections in here that you relate to. I don't know if you've had the experience of the wounded singer. I don't know whether you have, a distrust that's formed with creativity for yourself, whether that's through verbal expression or music or dance or cooking or whatever it is. Have there been experiences in your life that have made you distrust yourself and distrust, you know, the gloriousness of those moments of, yeah, the muse? I've got no other way really of explaining it other than presence and the muse. So that's it from me this week. There are things that I want to kind of explore over the next little while. And I'll definitely be diving more and more into voice as I dive more and more into voice myself. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that side of things. And, you know, and back into creativity again. I took a little bit of a break from creativity for a while because I think like 2020 life, I was just dealing with what was in front of me a lot of the time, and there wasn't a lot of space for creative expression. And so I want to bring that back into my conversation with you too. And I'm also open always to hear what you would like me to explore. So if there's something that you want to talk to me about, then, you know, I'm really very accessible. You can contact me via the website, carlinimmo.com. Instagram, I'm at Carlosophies. I'm always open to having a conversation with you on Clubhouse now that I'm there. I'm at Carlosophies on there too. You have an open invitation to reach out to me at any time. There's nothing more that I love than connecting with you. So thank you for sharing this time and space with me. And until next week, peace out. Want more me in your life? Head to carlinimmo.com or find me on Instagram at Carlosophies. But honestly, the best thing you can do is tell a friend about this podcast. Until next week, peace out.